Chapter 3. Blood Demands Blood. Sigilite. The Master of Mankind. The 17th Primarch was known to the emergent Imperium by many names. The worlds left in his legion's triumphant wake knew him as the Anointed, the 17th Son, or more elegantly, the Bearer of the Word. To his Primarch brothers, he was simply Lorgar, the name given to him on his home world of Colchis during the years of turmoil before the Emperor's arrival. Yet as with many Primarchs, he also bore an informal title, a term of respect often used by the 18 legions. Where Fulgrim of the 3rd Legion was known respectfully as the Phoenician, and Ferus Manus of the 10th Legion carried the Gorgon as his title, the Lord of the 17th Legion was the Urizen, a name pulled from the half-forgotten writings of ancient Terran myth. None of the 100,000 warriors gathered spoke those names now. As the Word-Bearer's Legion stood at its full, unbelievable strength in perfectly ordered ranks, every one of his sons chanted his true name in sibilant whispers, as if the syllables were an invocation. Aurelian, they breathed in unison. Lorgar Aurelian. Lorgar, the Golden One. Thus was the father known to his chosen children. The 17th Primarch turned his gaze to the ocean of grey-armoured warriors bred to do his bidding. He seemed to pause just for a moment at the immensity of what he was seeing. Those closest to him saw the fires of thought light up his eyes. "My sons," he said, colouring the words with a smile tainted by sorrow, "it lifts my heart to see you all." To stare at one of the God Emperor's sons was to drink in a vision of avataric perfection. Human senses, even the laboratory-forged perceptions of an Astartes warrior, struggled to process what they were seeing. When Argeltal first stood before Lorgar as a boy, still shy of his 11th birthday, he had suffered nightmares of confusion and pain for a month. The Legion's apothecaries, who watched over the infant recruits, were prepared for this. Turion, the apothecary who oversaw Argeltal's implantation surgeries during his pubescent years, had explained the phenomena to him in one of the tiny isolation cells granted to all Legion acolytes during their training.
"The nightmares are natural and will fade in time. Your mind must come to terms with what you have seen."
"I am not sure what I saw," the boy admitted.
"You saw the son of a god. Mortal minds and eyes were never meant to witness such things. It will take time to adjust."
"It hurts when I close my eyes. It hurts to remember him."
"It will not hurt forever."
"I want to serve him,"
the 11-year-old boy had promised, still trembling from the night's visions.
"I will serve him. I swear."
Turion had nodded, going on to speak of the many lethal trials ahead before he could wear the mantle of an Astartes. Argeltal had listened to none of it, at least not then, not that morning with the weak Colchisian sun bringing dawn to his single-windowed cell. He still thought of Turion. The apothecary had died 40 years before, and Argeltal kept a memento of the battle. Even now, he could never hold the curved, broken alien blade without remembering Turion's slashed throat. In truth, that was why he kept it. Remembrance. A morbid habit, perhaps, and one the chaplains had often chastised him for. It was the mark of an unhealthy mind to gather the weapons that slew one's brothers. Argeltal raised his eyes.
"Blood demands blood,"
Lorgar said to the warriors gathered in Monarchia's cratered grave.
"Blood demands blood."
As always, when in his father's presence, Argeltal rationed his gaze to focus upon individual details rather than his gene father's full manifestation. Lorgar's eyes, the snowy grey of Colchis's winter skies, were ringed by coal, setting them even brighter against the Primarch's skin, skin that seemed golden to unvisored eyes. Argeltal's helm's eye lenses filtered everything to a world of dark-washed tactical readouts, but it stole none of the detail. He could make out the thousands of individual Colchisian glyphs gold-inked onto the Primarch's white flesh. It was said the tattoos of cuneiform scripture covered most of Lorgar's body, Certainly they trailed down his face in tight, perfect lines, from his shaved head to his jawline. Each sentence a prayer of devotion, a prophetic hope for the future, or an invocation of strength from a higher power. Where Lorgar's regalia hid his flesh, the writing continued over the golden plates of armour, acid-etched into the shining surfaces. Yet for all his majesty, the 17th Primarch did not display his grandeur by ceremonial war gear. His armour may have been gold, but it was no more ornate than the Mark III plate worn by his captains. The oath papers and scrolls of scripture pinned to his breastplate and pauldrons told not of the Primarch's own glory, but his vows to his father and his devotion to serve the people of the Imperium.
"And so we come to this," the Primarch said, his voice never rising far above a whisper, because it never needed to.
It reached the ears of his closest sons and translated smoothly across the vox for the rear ranks.
"And so we come to this. Yet still they make us wait for the answers we deserve."
Human linguistics couldn't convey the fierce, soulful confidence Lorgar exuded. His slender lips were curled into the crooked half-smile of an impassioned poet, despite standing in the grave of his greatest achievement. In his gauntleted hands, clutched in gold fists that seemed reluctant to raise the weapon, was Acrosius, the height of an Astartes warrior. Illuminarium was the Primarch's one concession to grandeur. The weapon's haft was the cream of ivory, reinforced by a grip of black iron. Its head was an orb of adamantium, stained black through a forge master's touch, and decorated with silver-leafed runes. Evenly spaced spikes, the length of human forearms, projected from its outer edges, lending the mace a brutish air, almost at odds with a philosophical seeker who carried it across the stars. Despite the immense craftsmanship in its forging, Lorgar's Crozius was ostentation utterly without beauty. Entire worlds had been put to the flame by its bearer, while every chaplain of the Word-Bearer's Legion wielded its lesser reflection. None of Lorgar's sons, even those who had spent years from his side, were blind to their father's unease. The Primarch cast glances back at the grounded Ultramarines Thunderhawks, waiting for any signs of emergence. Around his poet's smile was the faint suggestion of black stubble, something Argal Tarl had never seen before on his meticulous Primarch. Lorgar turned away from his sons, now staring down at the impassive gunships. His whisper carried to the entire legion,
"Gilliman, brother of my blood, if not my heart, come to me and answer for your madness."
In theatrical unity, the gunship's ramps began to lower. The legion heard their father's last whisper as the Ultramarines showed themselves at last.
"Bearers of the word,"
he murmured the warning, soft as snakeskin on silk,
"stand ready and watch for the first sign of treachery."
A mere 100 warriors stood opposed to 100,000. Facing an ocean of grey armour, a single company of Ultramarines had made planetfall with their Primarch. Even in the gravity of the moment, Argal Tarl wasn't sure whether to be mystified at this display or insulted by it. He settled for both, his irritation rising all the while.
"The 19th Company," Zaphon voxed, watching the Ultramarine's banner waving in the gentle wind.
It depicted a rearing white horse with a mane of fire over a series of numerals.
"Intriguing."
Argal Tarl watched the white horse rippling in the wind, trying to discern some significance in the 19th's presence. The creature seemed in motion, the flames of its mane real and burning.
"Ethon Company, the Ultramarine's 19th, was well known to many outside Gilliman's legion.
Ethon himself commanded an entire imperial expedition away from his Primarch and was rumoured to be a stern ambassador and a shrewd diplomat. Whatever the truth, the captain was trusted with a great deal more responsibility and independence than most other Astartes could ever claim.
"They are named," Zaphon said, "for a fire-breathing horse in ancient Macragia mythology. Ethon was the name of a horse that pulled the sun god's chariot across the sky."
Argal Tarl resisted the urge to shake his head.
"With the greatest respect, brother, I couldn't care less." "Knowledge is power,"
the chaplain replied.
"Focus,"
the captain snapped back. You heard the Primarch. Zaphon sent an acknowledgement chime across the vox, a single static buzz. The final gunship ramp lowered on steam-venting pistons. Argyltal remained still, his muscles locked tense, as the 13th Primarch descended with his honor guard, followed by... No, he said, shock stealing his breath. Blood of the God Emperor, Zaphon whispered. Ahead of them, Lorgar watched with a viper's smile. Malkador the Sigillite. Next to the Primarch, armored in battle plate of pearl and cerulean, walked a slender figure in unassuming plain robes. Human, utterly frail in Gilliman's massive shadow, the First Lord of Terror clutched a staff of dark metal and rattling chains, topped by a twin-headed eagle. Gilliman, by contrast, was hulking where the Sigillite was sparse. His warplate was the blue of Terra's long-burned oceans, an echo from an age of legend, and edged by gold and mother-of-pearl, glinting in the rising moonlight.
What insanity is this?
Snarled Corfiran, his voice thickened by emotion too rancid to suppress. Peace, my friend, Lorgar murmured, his gaze never leaving the opposing line of warriors. The answers we seek will soon be ours. Captains, step forward. At the command, 100 captains advanced, bolters and blades held at ease in gauntlets of grey. 100 chaplains, their gold trimmings and crozius mauls marking them out from the ranks, remained a step behind. Behind the warrior priests, 100,000 word-bearers stood at the ready, holding ranks despite the uneven platform made by the pulverized ground. Argyltal tore his glance from Gilliman, the Lord of Macragge's noble features, as difficult to look upon as his own father's. His eyes were the hardest part to take in. There was no doubt, no speculation, no curiosity. Nothing that told of mortal emotion behind the deep-set eyes. The face could have been sculpted from suntanned stone. Dignity incarnate. The 7th captain repressed a shiver and turned his attention to the Sigillite. Too human to fear, yet too influential to ignore. The Emperor's right hand and closest confidant. Here, and apparently supporting the Ultramarines in their destruction of the perfect city, Argyltal's hand tightened on the bolter grip. Brother, Lorgar spoke, his tones smooth on the surface, almost entirely hiding the tremble of grief his sons knew must be flowing through him. And Malkador, welcome to Monarchia. At these words, he gestured at the devastation, his handsome features lost to a sickened sneer.
Lorgar!
Gilliman's voice rumbled like distant thunder, and he said no more than his brother's name. Argyltal narrowed his eyes at the absolute neutrality in the tone, not a ghost of emotion. He'd seen automatons in the Legio Cybernetica with more humanity than the Ultramarines Primarch.
Primarch Lorgar, said Malkador, bowing by way of introduction. It grieves us all to meet in these circumstances.
The Golden Warrior took a step forward, his crozius resting on his shoulder. Does it now? It grieves us all. You do not look grieved, my brother. Gilliman said nothing. Lorgar broke his stare after several moments, regarding the Sigillite. Answers, Malkador. He took another step forward, now halfway between his legion and the 100 Ultramarines. I want answers. What happened here? What madness has been allowed to run unchecked? The Sigillite pulled back his hood, revealing a face so pale it bordered on grey unhealthiness.
You cannot guess, Lorgar.
The human shook his head as if in sorrow.
Truly, this is a surprise to you. Answer me!
The Primarch screamed. The Ultramarines flinched back, several raising weapons in hands that shook with surprise. Lorgar threw his arms out to the sides, taking in the surrounding devastation a second time, and spit flew from his lips as he roared,
Answer me for what you have done here! I demand it!
What do we do? Zaphon voxed. What's happening?
Argyltal didn't answer. His blade and bolter were suddenly very heavy in his hands, and he stared at the Ultramarines displaying their own shock so openly. While they held ranks, it was clear they were uneasy, and rightly so.
"What have you done to my city?"
Lorgar's voice was a hissing whisper spoken through a false smile.
"It was not compliant."
Malkador's words were slowed by patience.
"This culture, this world, was not
Liar, blasphemer! It was the model of compliance!"
Several Ultramarines retreated a little now, and Argeltal could see them looking to one another in doubt. A flutter of voices teased the Vox network as the word-bearers picked up signals from the Ultramarines voxing each other in their unease. Only Gilliman appeared unmoved. Even Malkador was jarred, his eyes wide and his staff gripped tighter as he faced down the Primarch's anger.
"Lorgar! They chanted my father's name in the streets! Lorgar! They honored him with each sunrise!"
Lorgar came closer, his eyes wild, focused like targeting reticules on his father's advisor.
"Answer me, human! Justify this when statues of the Emperor adorned every place of gathering!"
"They worshipped him."
Malkador raised his head, for he was half the height of both Primarchs.
"They revered him."
He looked up at Lorgar, seeking some sign of comprehension in the giant's golden face. Seeing none, he drew breath again and wiped a fleck of the Primarch's spittle from his cheek.
"They worshipped him as a god."
"You plead my case for me?"
Lorgar dropped his croziers, letting it fall to the broken ground with a dull thud. He looked at his hands, fingers curled into claws, as if he would tear out his own eyes.
You stand in the ruin of perfection, and you say yourself this city was annihilated for nothing? Have you travelled the length of the galaxy to show me you have lost your fragile, mortal mind?
Lorgar,
the Sigilite tried again, but the rest of his words never left his throat. Malkador fell in silence, smashed aside by Lorgar's backhanded strike. Every warrior nearby heard the wrenching snap of bones breaking, and Malkador crashed onto the rocky ground 20 meters away, tumbling to a halt in the dust. Face to face with his brother, Lorgar bared his teeth into Gilliman's impassive features.
"Why did you do this?"
"I was ordered to."
"By this worm?"
Lorgar laughed, reaching out his hand towards the fallen figure of Malkador.
"By this maggot?"
The word-bearer's Primarch shook his head and stalked back to his own warriors.
"I will take my legion to Terra and inform our father of this madness myself."
"He knows."
The voice was Malkador's. He rose on unsteady limbs, his words strained and spoken through bleeding lips. Gilliman inclined his head, the barest movement enough to send two of his warriors to aid the Emperor's advisor. Malkador stood, still hunched from the pain, and ordered the approaching Ultramarines away. With his arm outstretched, his staff leapt from the ground a dozen meters away and slapped neatly into his palm.
"What?"
Lorgar said, uncertain he'd heard correctly.
"What did you say?"
The wounded First Lord of Terra closed his eyes, using his staff of office as a crutch.
"I said, he knows. Your father knows."
"You lie."
Lorgar clenched his teeth again, his breath coming fast and shallow.
"You lie. And you are fortunate. I do not kill you for this blasphemy."
Malkador didn't argue. He closed his eyes, raised his head to the sky, and spoke without sound. Every word-bearer, every Ultramarine, every living being in a 10-kilometer radius heard the man's psychic voice pulsing through their minds. Such was its power.
"He will not listen, my lord. Not to me."
Lorgar froze, his hands a hair's breadth from retrieving his croziers on the ground. Gilliman's most expansive movement since arriving was to turn from his golden brother, not in disgust, as Argyll-Tal first thought, but without any expression at all. He was simply shielding his eyes. Malkador's eyes remained closed, his face angled up to the heavens, to the vessels in orbit. Lorgar stepped back, voicelessly mouthing, "No, no, no," as if whispered words could somehow alter fate. The world around them exploded in light. The displacement of air resulted in a bang not far from a sonic boom, but that wasn't what sent Argyll-Tal reeling. He'd seen teleportation technology used before, had travelled via such rare means himself, but the noise was filtered to tolerable levels by his helm's perceptive systems. And it wasn't the light of a teleport flare that forced him to avert his eyes. This, too, would have been compensated for by his armor's internal sensors, dimming his eye lenses immediately. But he was blind. Blinded by gold, burning like molten metal. The vox shrieked with thousands of his brothers voicing the same malady, but the reports from his brethren were dull, half lost, in an assault of noise that shouldn't exist. It wasn't a fault with the vox. It was in his head. A crashing of waves loud enough to throw off his balance. Blind and almost deafened, Argyll-Tal felt his bolter slip from his grip. It took all his strength to remain standing. Lorgar Aurelian saw none of this. No blinding golden light, no deafening psychic roar. He saw six figures standing in unity, five of whom he did not recognize, and one he did. Behind them, the ultramarines, not afflicted as his warriors were on their knees in an orderly display. Only Gilliman and the Sigilite remained standing. Lorgar looked back to the six. The five ringed the familiar figure, and though the Primarch did not know them by name, he knew their creed. Achingly elaborate armor of rich gold, cloaks of royal scarlet draped from their shoulders, long halberds topped by weighty silver blades, gripped in hands that would never tremble. Custodians, the Emperor's guardians. Lorgar looked to the sixth figure, who was just a man. Despite the vigor of youth, age lines showed time's tracks across features that were both stern and gentle, all at once. The man's appearance depended entirely on which facet of his face one focused upon. He was a tired, aging man, and a heroic statue immortalized in life's prime. He was a young, grimacing warlord with cold eyes, and a confused elder on the edge of weeping. Lorgar focused on those eyes now, seeing the warmth of love within the benevolence of trust. The man blinked slowly, and his eyes opened again. They were cold, with a frigid touch of disappointment blending into the ice of disgust. "Lorgar," the man said. His voice was quiet but strong, lost in the indecipherable vista between hatred and kindness.
"Father,"
Lorgar said, to the Emperor of Mankind.